were listening to a message from St. Peter's West Campus in Katy, Texas.
As you're making your way to the back, I'll introduce myself. I never get tired of saying this because it is so true, and I feel like lately I've really been celebrating this fact, but my name is Jameson. I'm the executive pastor at St. Peter's, and easily the best part of my job is I get to worship at all of our venues on a regular basis, and occasionally I get to be with you and worship and preach. And one of the reasons that I'm really celebrating that fact is not just the rotation we had in July, which was so wonderful for all of our clergy to be able to preach in every venue, but also because this is the season of a capital campaign that is celebrating all that St. Peter's has to offer to our community. We are a diverse, large family. And as a diverse, large family, we have discerned that going out west is something that we want to do. We want to share the ways in which we've been a minister in this community for over 40 years. We're looking ahead to the next 40. I can't tell you how excited I am. And also, specifically on today's topic, this is, a slight humble brag, but many years ago, I took one of those spiritual gift surveys, and one of the iterations of that used language around discernment, and that's one of my spiritual gifts, figuring out what you can do with the resources you have available. And as an executive pastor, that's literally my job. I serve the church to say, hey, if this is our vision, if this is our goal, how do we want to do that with our members, with our staff, with our resources? I sit around in my office and people often accuse me of living in year 2022, but I'm like, why live for now when you can live for then? And my wife would say there's a whole host of issues with that, but she's not preaching today. I am. So I'm really passionate about this topic. And I hope that today you will begin to wrestle with this idea of spiritual discernment. There are some, and as I said, it's kind of a strength of mine, but as we all know, strengths can also be detriments. So there's ways I was convicted and challenged by the scripture today. But discernment at its most basic form, we're talking about discerning what God's saying in your lives. We're looking for an answer, right? We're looking for an answer to a question, maybe that is subconscious or unconscious, maybe it's more formed. But I think if we're not careful, discernment goes more on the lines that maybe you've experienced like I have, where we're not really asking God for an answer, we're asking God to agree with our answer, right? Like, discernment is really about God discerning that he agrees with us, not us figuring out how we align with God. And in my life, there have been many times when I've used the term, let's talk about this, let's figure this out together. What that's really come down to is I really just want you to agree with me. And it's been innocent at times. Maybe if I really want to get that candy bar, see that movie, Mom, a little bit more manipulative. But the point is, we're often in these situations where we use this term, and it's a lot about, I have the right answer. I need people to agree with me. However, I would pose to you that you got to be careful what you ask because you will get an answer back, and often it may not agree with you. Let me give you a case scenario of a very specific example. I met this beautiful brunette now about 10 years ago. It's hard to believe. I saw her outside of chapel. She was standing by herself. I was a Texas gentleman, so of course I couldn't let this pretty young lady sit by herself in church. So I offered to sit with her. We struck up a conversation. She came back to seminary the next year. I saw her. She was actually one of my communion servers. So I'm thinking this is clearly providential from God that we met a year before. You were visiting. Now you're serving me communion. And then over the course of some events, of course, I'm talking about my now wife, Catherine. She uttered this infamous line, which is, I've never seen the Dark Knight. Were you as horrified as I was back then? I'm like, you've never seen one of the pioneering works of cinema? This is heralded as one of the best crime dramas of all time. Oh yeah, and it happens to be a Batman movie. This is one of those films, one of the last times I can remember camping out for a movie at like 10 that opened at 12:30 to get good seats, 12:30, you know, midnight. And it actually lived up to the hype. It exceeded it. You haven't seen one of the great, she said no. So I'm like, well, me being a Texas gentleman, and also already having this idea, maybe we could discern what life would be like together. I would love to offer this opportunity for us to just be friends, to watch this film, and you know, we'll see what happens. So it happens, and we're sitting there, and actually, I'll say the conversation went so well that 2.5 hours later, I don't know how much of the movie we watched because we were just talking and really getting to know each other, and I was feeling really good about this. I was thinking, yes, This is what mutual discernment looks like. We're moving along this path. And she said, Jameson, because my wife, remember, is this chaplain who's very in touch with their feelings and very intuitive in ways in which my Excel spreadsheet mind is not. She said, Jameson, I just want to stop here for a second. I've really enjoyed our time this evening, but it's pretty obvious you really like me. I said, that could be accurate or not. I can either confirm or deny that. She's like, and I don't know if you know this, you come on a little strong. I said, I can neither confirm nor deny that, but that also sounds accurate. She said, you know, I feel like we're having one of those conversations, one of those DTRs are kind of defining the relationship. I just need you to know, I'm not really interested in dating someone. I just started in seminary, you know, a week ago. I want to get my feet under me. I have school to look forward to. My wife is brilliant, so she actually cared about things like academics. Who does that in college, I guess? And I was thinking, okay, well, what does that mean? She's like, well, let's just see how this goes. And I remember thinking in my like half beleaguered, half giddy, well, you know, I wasn't really thinking that we had, oh, and then after the evening was over, I was like, dang, I came into tonight thinking that with my charm, which apparently is strong, I don't know about that, but that we would wind up dating. How could it not be? You were my communion server. God's clearly blessed this relationship. How do you not see this? How are we not discerning? And I realized there wasn't any discernment. I was trying to convince her that her yes should agree with my yes. And I realized in that moment, that was my first taste of, man, I really want something. And I had this answer in mind. But if I'm really going to be honest that, you know, I care about a relationship, I care about figuring this out with someone else, those answers aren't always going to line up, right? Now, I have to say that, you know, 6 months later, she did go on a date with me. And we eventually got married and we had a wonderful child. Now, she would say she took time, you know, to figure out that, she would say later, because she hates when I tell this story, without this clarifying fact, she also liked me at that moment as well, but she felt like, because of how strong I was coming on, that we would probably be a more serious relationship, like get married, stay together for the rest of our lives and have kids kind of relationship. Who would have thought that? But the point is, she doesn't know, that was a lot to take in her first week of school. And in retrospect, I'm like, yeah, you're right. It is really hard to like show up. I'm new in town. Oh, look, there's a 6'9" guy that's really interested in me and keeps forcing me to watch superhero movies. He's a nice guy, but man, brush your teeth. Don't lean on me. So, you know, like that kind of thing. So I wore her down is really the moral of the story. No, the point is we worked through that together. And eventually we got to a point where the yes and the yes lined up. And it was something that, you know, took a little while, maybe a little longer than I wanted to, but ultimately I think it worked out pretty well in my life and in the life of my family. But I wonder how many of us have struggled with that. Think about those really important things in your life, those things you want more than anything. Maybe it is a relationship. Maybe it's a job. Maybe it's a boat. Maybe it's a car. Maybe it's an opportunity. Maybe it's a trip. There are all these things that line up, and we feel like we're discerning whether or not they're right for us because there's this narrative that exists out in the world that you need to figure out how you can accomplish something. You are your own soul motivator. You are responsible for everything in your life. You got to go out there and get it. As much as I love the industrious spirit that is part of our country, I think sometimes we feed so much into that, we think we almost operate like we're on an island, we have the best answer, you just need to take it now, let's move on. And what we find in reality is that if you're actually asking for opinions, you may find this hard to believe, there are a lot of different opinions out there. And navigating that is actually a much more difficult process. And I wonder how many of us have started conversations thinking, how could you not agree with me? This is so clear. Only to wind up at the end with a totally different decision you don't like or agree with. And we should know this, right? I mean, I offer up this simple thought experiment. Put 10 of your friends or coworkers in the same room and try to choose a lunch spot. Discern a lunch spot. How well is that going to go? Yeah, you use the hour of your lunch break to agree that there are at least 5 options, which will require a secondary vote. So at least over the next 2 months, you'll finally have a spot to go to. That's if one of those places doesn't close down in the meantime, right? Discernment is hard. It's challenging. And honestly, sometimes I feel like I cheat because I'm like, I think about everything, all the iterations. But the problem with that kind of thinking is it's me thinking. It's the I thinking. And fact check, Jameson, you don't have all the facts and information. You're not the master of the universe, although sometimes I feel like it would be easier if I was. And for all of us, we've got to fact check ourselves. We don't have all the facts and information. Our opinions, our answers may not be right in that situation. That's the hard work of discernment. Figuring out, are we asking God for an answer? Are we wanting God to agree with our answer? That's the wrestling that goes on. That's the wrestling we'll see in our scripture today. How do we know if we're being faithful in discernment? Because we're in the midst of this capital campaign. And I talked about it being a celebration. And I know you've heard this story before, but 3 years ago, one of the first things I did when I showed up at St. Peter's was to handle the negotiation to buy the property. 3 years ago. And in the course of that, we had a leadership change. And we had this whole narrative unfold that we had to figure out, what are we discerning in this season? And Alex came, and now we look at how strong and how healthy and how wonderful and how the Spirit is moving in this place, and we think, yes, we discerned that together. We stayed the course. But there's been moments for some of us along the road, if you've been here longer than me, it's hard for me to believe I've been a part of this story for almost 4 years. Some of you are like, 4 years? You're still wet behind the ear. You know, like there's this story where we kept discerning together. And I think for many of us, if you had told us day one, we could have a building, would have been like, I'm in. But we've been on this journey. And the more I've thought about it, the more I've seen the ways in which God has shaped our hearts, not only as a West Campus, but as a church community, to make us prepared for a time and a season such as this. How do we live into that faithfully? I got to say, over the last 3.5, 4 years, I don't know if I made every spiritual discernment decision without thinking, God, this really is the best answer. And I've kind of stopped being amazed by the ways in which God says, that's the best you can do. That answer? Let me show you something you haven't even considered. We'll be finding ourselves with Solomon, if you want to turn with me, in 1 Kings 3:3-12. Solomon has the unenviable task of taking over for his father, King David, one of the greatest biblical characters outside of Jesus. I mean, right up there with Moses, one of the great biblical characters in all of Scripture, and Solomon's king, and he's trying to figure out, okay, what now? How do I live into the shadow, the footsteps of my father? So we pick up with Solomon's story in verse 3. Solomon loved the Lord, walking in the statutes of his father David, only he sacrificed and offered incense at the high places. I want to stop here for a second because I love this story. I think Solomon is a fascinating character. Of all the kings, I've probably studied him the most personally. I've read this story a bunch. But this week, this very week, God fact-checked me by saying, oh, you know this story? Did you know this? And I'm like, I did not. I did not ever catch that because I'm so quick to jump ahead, and we'll talk about it in just a second because we kind of know this story. We know, if you've been in the church for a while, you kind of know what Solomon's about to ask for. But this line is one of the most important lines of this story. So important that apparently I've glossed over it for my entire ministry and many times that I've studied the Old Testament. And it may seem like a small thing, but there's this phrase, only he sacrificed and offered incense at the high places. It's putting it against his love for the Lord. And you may be thinking, well, that's a small technicality. What are these high places? Why do they matter? I asked myself the same thing as the Spirit was speaking to me this week as I was reading. Okay, that seems just to be another place to sacrifice. And then I started looking through the Old Testament, and I realized there are so many times when God says you need to tear down the high places of other communities, because high places can also be translated as temples of other gods, places where other gods have been worshipped. Now, I want to be clear here. I'm not saying that Solomon is worshiping other gods. What I'm saying is he's going to places of worship for other gods to worship his God. You may be thinking, what's the big deal? It would be like me saying A&M is going to open its season with a home game in Austin, Texas. I'm not saying that's wrong. Maybe I am saying that. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm saying it would be complicated both for the University of Texas and the Aggie fan base that we're opening our home season in Austin. There's something about affiliating yourself with a team, or in this case, much more seriously, a God, that just is a problem for biblical writers. And again, they point it out. They don't hide from it. They offer it up as part of Solomon's story. But we need to know from the beginning, Solomon's clearly discerning. He's doing something that's not sinful per se, but not great. It's one of those things, it's saying, why even dabble? It's like driving without your seatbelt. Technically speaking, well, I guess some would argue that is against law, and it is. But my point is, putting the law aside for a moment, which is a dangerous thing for a pastor to say, you could argue, I guess in some context, well, if I'm just driving around my neighborhood, what's the risk? Well, the risk is you have any kind of accident, that's right? So why put yourself in that risk? And that's kind of what the scholars and the writers of 1 Kings are saying. Solomon is kind of putting himself at risk as he's seeking out these high places. He's trying to connect with God, and they're kind of wondering, why are you doing it like this? And really what we see is that Solomon feels like he has an answer, and his answer is this high place, and he's hoping that God comes there to speak with him. Now, a little bit in their defense, remember, as the story unfolds, they're looking to build the temple. You know, David wanted to do that, but God essentially told David, hey, I love you, I value your leadership, but not meant for you. It's meant for your son. And so that you could maybe see a little bit, there's not this central structured place. But in reality, I think we're opening up this story because it's very clear to all the writers of 1 Kings, all those that have, you know, labored on preserving the story before it could be recorded. Solomon is kind of lost. He's seeking out, what does faithfulness look like? Where do I find God? And while he's not going about it in a sinful way, he's maybe not going about it in the most effective way. And yet, this is where the power of God shows up. God still comes to this high place, a place which he had previously said to destroy. We continue in verse 4. The king went to Gibeon to sacrifice there, for that was the principal high place. Solomon used to offer 1,000 burnt offerings on that altar. So again, clearly a location where he's tried to encounter God. And those reading this would be very conflicted about that. Why do you keep going there? At Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night, and God said, ask what I should give you. And Solomon said, you have shown great and steadfast love to your servant, my father David, because he walked before you in faithfulness and righteousness and uprightness of heart towards you. And you have kept for him this great and steadfast love and have given him a son to sit on his throne today. And now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king in place of my father David, although I am a little child. I do not know how to go out or come in. And your servant is in the midst of the people whom you have chosen, a great people, so numerous it cannot be numbered or counted. Give your servant, therefore, an understanding mind to govern your people, able to discern between good and evil, for who can govern this your great people? I'm going to stop here again for just a moment. You have an interesting setup. So God comes to him in this vision. Again, this would seem a little unusual that God's appearing in a place that's been designated, but I think this is to show the supreme authority of God to show up anywhere God desires. And he engages with Solomon, and I get the sense that it really is one of those sit-down conversations. Solomon, why are you here? What can I give you that will make you go worship kind of where you know you need to worship? What do you need? I've already called you as king, I've set you up, but obviously you're hesitating. It's interesting because Solomon rails off all these great things about David. I mean, he lives in the city of Jerusalem, right? He knows about his father's legacy, and yet there seems to be a discomfort for him to worship there because he doesn't quite understand how he connects to it yet. Again, there's an alignment issue. He wants to be faithful, but he doesn't know how to tap in to his story. He understands who God is, but he's struggling to figure out, how do I connect with God? What are my resources and abilities? And this is a challenging thing for him, so much so that he calls himself your servant king. Very unusual for someone of royal stature to essentially say, I acknowledge how little I know and how much I deserve this post. I think this is real humility. He's saying, I'm doing my best. I'm doing what I think. Maybe I shouldn't be here, but I don't know what else to do. So God says, well, what do you need? And he says, I need a discerning mind. I love that. In some translations, it's also translated as a discerning heart, a compassionate heart. Essentially, someone who can understand, have wisdom is another word, to understand right and wrong, good and evil. How do I combine what I can do with what I should do? How do I know the right path? So let's look at what God's response is in verse 10. It pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this. God said to him, because you have asked this and have not asked for yourself long life or riches, for the life of your enemies, but have asked for yourself understanding to discern what is right, I do now according to your word. Indeed, I give you a wise and discerning mind. No one like you has been before you, and no one like you shall rise after you. I love how that ends. It's this powerful thing to say, you've asked for such a wonderful thing. And truly in Solomon's life, with all the wisdom writings, and just as David is intimately involved with the Psalms, Solomon will be intimately involved with Proverbs and some of the wisdom literature. He was a king, and yet he found himself in this time trying to figure out, I don't know what to do. I'm wondering how many of you have ever been in a season of life where you've been appointed for a task of which you do not feel qualified. Has anyone ever been there? Have you ever been in any situation in which you know that you have a responsibility which you cannot shuck, and you have been called? It's you. There's no one else. And you suddenly find yourself saying, do I drive to Kyle Field and offer up burnt offering? You know, like what is the next step in this? What am I supposed to do? For me, when I read this passage, I have a very clear recent moment. It was the day I found out I was going to be a father. I remember being so excited. And then later that night, my wife rolled over because I couldn't sleep. And she's like, you're already thinking about him going to college and how you're going to work that out, aren't you? I'm like, yes. I didn't know it was a he at the time. But I'm like, yeah, I'm thinking about him in high school. What if he gets bullied? I'm thinking about, you know, all these other things. That was before we had all of these health considerations. You know, my mind was racing. And it really came down to, I realized I loved babies. But maybe because of how big I am, I always thought it was best, like small purse dogs, let's not let the giant person accidentally fall on top of the small impressionable person. So I would hold them and they were nice, but I'm gonna be ultimately responsible for holding something that can fit on my forearm. Its needs, its wants are gonna be up to me. I feel ill-equipped. I don't know what I'm doing. This cannot be Excel spreadsheeted. I could come up with a great formula for diaper changing. Apparently, that doesn't get the diapers changed. And yet, from the moment my son was born, there was a change in my heart. It's not like I instantly knew what I was supposed to do, but my heart and my mind were changed to say, but I want to figure out what to do. I wanted to be Henry's father. And that changed everything. I hear this in Solomon. Solomon doesn't know how to be king, and yet when he asks for a discerning mind, what he's really saying is, but I want the kind of mind that wants to figure out how to be the best king that I can be. Show me what I should do. I know what I can do, but show me what I should do. And there's still moments with my son Henry where I have that experience. I know all the different things that can happen, Lord, but this child won't stop talking about animal crackers. I know that his mom's about to come home and I'm supposed to save him for dinner. What should I do in this moment? There are treacherous waters. Do I appease the child and offend the mother? Do I go with the mother? But then my son looks at me as this great hoarder of crackers. Is this going to put a wedge in our relationship? He's going to say, hey, Dad, I really appreciate everything you've done. I'm envisioning him on his wedding, but you held out on me back then, man. You know, yet there are those fears, right, in your mind. And in those moments, I feel that discernment to say, Lord, give me the discerning mind to figure out what to do to navigate this. And that's a very concrete example for me, but I think for all of us, we're gonna have those moments, right? Maybe it's a promotion at work, maybe it's a job change, maybe it's a family dynamic shift, maybe it's health news. Life continues to unfold, and we will constantly find ourselves in moments and in places where we don't know what we're supposed to do. And yet, discernment is about recognizing that it's not about me having the answer and God agreeing with me. It's about me being open to all the resources I have and seeking out what is God's answer for me in this moment. Help me discern, O Lord, what is wise and what is just and what is true. It speaks right to our hearts. Something I've come to appreciate more and more over the last couple of years. How does all that tie into our campaign? I would say intimately. Our campaign is another season of discernment. Giving may seem like a rote, routine thing. It's writing a check. It's turning in a card. It's putting something online. It's figuring out how you're going to engage financial sense. Or perhaps you're already at that point and you're figuring out, well, how many hours do I need to volunteer at Sunday school? You know, all of these things. All of us can show up to a church and we know all the things we can do, but I don't know if you're like me. There are a couple exceptions of like things I shouldn't do, like don't leave me alone by myself in the nursery. But what should I do, God? What are you calling me and my family to? My hope is that you pray that prayer honestly and openly to say, Lord, how can I use my time? How can I use my talent? And for this campaign specifically, there is a component. How can I use my resources to invest in a church and what it's doing as it expands out west and continues to build up and spruce up its ministries on its campus? It's been around for 40 years. What should I do to be a part of that? And the beautiful thing about asking God what you should do, you know, seeking out God's answer, is it's tailor-made for you. God's answer is always tailor-made for you. It's not a competition. It's not a comparison. We're not going to rank everyone's response to every campaign and say, well, you guys got an A+. It's not about that. We said from the beginning, we want this campaign to be a spiritual experience, and we mean it. And there's nothing more spiritual than connecting with a God that knows you intimately and saying, God, you know me better than anyone. How can we be used in order to do the ministry here now and to be a part of this ministry that we're looking ahead for 40 years? In some ways, I hope that we all pray the prayer of Solomon. I hope in some ways that we continue to seek out ways we can have a discerning mind, not to get hung up, because this is the one thing that Solomon says in this story that I think is so powerful, is that he doesn't let his perception of his own limitations stop him from earnestly asking God, what can I do? So I would pray that prayer for all of us. How do we get out of our own way of thinking, I have to have all the answers right now, and how can I really seriously discern as an individual, as a family, as a group, what is God calling us to? We've had several leaders in our church who have reflected on the ways in which God has spoken to them, and they've begun their discernment, and we've had a chance to record their videos, and we shared one of those last week, and this week I'm excited that we have another video as someone reflects on how they've begun to spiritually discern being a part of this Rooted in Christ campaign. I offer that up to you now.
I'm Gaylene Taylor, and I joined St. Peter's in 2011. Shortly after we joined St. Peter's, I fell and broke my foot and had to have surgery. And we didn't really know too many people. We knew a few people here, but not very many. And suddenly I started getting phone calls and cards and lots of prayers coming my way from the care team. And so I said, as soon as I get well, we're going to find out what this care team deal is. And so we did. We joined the care team and have been members ever since. At a previous church, I was involved in a second campus activity. And I know the difficulties and so forth that goes with meeting in a school cafeteria or auditorium. And I know what a blessing it is when you have a facility to meet. So that's what part of this capital campaign is about, as well as keeping our Kingsland campus up to date. But aside from that is the caring ministry of our church, like the care team and the quilt ministry. And it gives us a new opportunity to touch many more people, bring new members into this ministry.
Moving from that, we'll now enter into a time of offering. And as we do that, I want to make you aware that today is a very special day in the life of our church. It's Stephen Ministry Celebration Sunday. And so I want to offer up a few comments, and then we're going to watch a video during the actual offertory. And as we're doing that, if you take those pads that are in every row, it may seem like a small thing, but when you sign in and you let us know what you need, and in fact, today you may be signing in to let us know that you need a Stephen minister. We would love to partner with you and to figure out how God's calling you into the deeper life of the church. So what is Stephen Ministry? Well, Stephen Ministry is a program that's been around at this church for working on 3 decades. And what it does is it comes alongside you in seasons of grief associated with sudden loss perhaps of employment, of a relationship, life changes, anything that you're finding it hard to just kind of be on your own. Again, challenging this narrative that you have to have all the right answers. And this person comes alongside you to speak with you, to help you process, and to seek deeper discernment with a God that loves you and cares for you. And so we have many Stephen ministers in our congregation. We're celebrating this across all of our venues because it's easy, because we have Stephen ministers in every venue. And so I want to ask first that those who have served or are currently serving in Stephen ministry, would you please stand so we can celebrate you? A round of applause. Thank you, guys. Awesome. And I also want to directly lift up a huge thank you is directed to Ken and Mary Knowlton, who began this ministry, like I said, so many years ago. Their vision and their understanding of needing to partner with lay leaders in our congregation who had a deep heart for those that are hurt and broken has turned this into a very powerful ministry of our church, and we're so thankful. As the offering goes around, I ask you to keep the campaign in your prayers, this great Stephen ministry in your prayers, and to reflect on the video that we now share.
It's been almost exactly 10 years since my wife hurt herself on the job first time, which led to a whole bunch of things. Kay's situation has gone from oops, to uh-oh, to oh my God, to holy. And it's still there. I mean, she still can't walk from the original surgery. She's wheelchair bound, doesn't get out very much, is on dialysis now because her kidneys failed. And I've been the guy who's been there all that time. And I was just putting so much pressure on myself. And so finally, one of the guys, a good buddy, called me at home and he said, we are going to get you a Stephen minister. He knew all that story, and he said, we're going to get you a Stephen minister. And I said, well, it's time. It's time. My Stephen minister is just a little bit older than I. And sometimes when we're together, I have to say, even to him, you know, we're just like two old farts sitting around drinking coffee on a Wednesday morning. It's just so easy to be with him. He's just so tuned in to what I'm doing that he knows the right questions. He never suggests anything. He's not there to tell me what to do. He's there to get me to talk to myself until I discover what is necessary. And I can tell him anything. He listens to anything. He listens to the good stuff. He listens to the bad stuff. And he's also very happy about the successes that I've had along the way. I can't wait to tell him about some things. So it's been a lot of pressure, but my Stephen minister has just walked me through it, talked me through it, questioned me through it, and I'm surviving very nicely. I'm grateful to Trinity for caring enough, the people there for caring enough to literally put a Stephen minister in my back pocket because I wouldn't be where I am today if it weren't for that. So I give thanks every day. In fact, my connection with the church now is I don't go to worship to take, I go to give. I have gotten so much from the church, so much through my Stephen minister, that I go to give it all back, or give us back as much of it as I possibly can every Sunday morning. This relationship with the Stephen minister is about you and God and getting you through the next period. I'm very proud to say I have a Stephen minister. If you're under anything like the pressure that I was under then, wouldn't you like to be where I am now? You can get there if you take on a Stephen minister. But you can't have the one that I have.
Thank you for listening. For more information about St. Peter's and our mission to connect the world with God's love, please visit us at stpkaty.org. God bless.